The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
We've got to talk a little bit about healthcare. Also, there was a big meeting called with all of the royal staff in England, unheard of, had never been done. All of the staff from all of the palaces all over Great Britain were called in to meet. There was some thought of abdication, but the Queen has always said she's going to die, as she'll serve until she dies. She's 91. Prince Philip is 96. He is retiring. And that was the big news, that he's no longer going to do any official duties at 96. He had already reduced it to 110 days of work at 96. But he is known... He's known for some politically incorrect things, and it used to be kind of funny. You know, he's known on... she was so serious, and he could make her laugh. In 1953, they were on a tour of New Zealand, where she was really hot, and she was scowling, and it was nasty, and he walked right up to her and looked her in the eye, said, "Cheer up, sausage!" Which apparently made her laugh and everybody else. The first thing he said after she was coronated, and they were in their 20s, she comes out of Westminster Abbey after the coronation. She's in full regalia. She has the robes and the scepter and the crown, and he looks at her and says, "Where'd you get that hat?" It turned a little darker as he started to age. And his humor became kind of like, okay, Grandpa's a little nuts. Pay no attention to Grandpa. And it's kind of sad as it goes down, but he is leaving. France, we also have an update on France. What's going to happen? Is Marine Le Pen, does she have any chance at all? Maybe. But let's start with politics here in America. Let's talk about this wonderful healthcare plan. Oh, this is, if this isn't a small constitutional government supporter's dream, I don't know what is. We start there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Glad you're here. So the Republicans are looking to pass the new health care bill. And I like the fact that we all know all about it. We've had a chance to debate the bill and talk about it. And they're not just jamming it down and jamming it
except
through.
For no, yeah, and yes, except for
let's
those
see.
Two
look
things.
At look at how twisted.
Exactly
he is.
Right.
No and yes. Which one is it?
Make up your mind, moron.
Yeah, I did.
Right, moron.
So
moron.
Stupid.
Why do you hate people so much, moron? Anyway, so we're gonna pass it, and we don't really know what's in it, except. They're gonna cut back on some of it, which will make it even better.
Well, I think what the Republicans are kind of saying is they're gonna get this done, even if they have to pole vault over it,
okay.
If they have to parachute into it.
That's right.
If they have to bulldoze through it, they're gonna get it done. Mm-hmm. And then when they get it passed, then we'll be able to find out what's in it. I mean, shut up.
Well, we do know this.
Right? Thank you. You finally
with you
come
guys
around.
Now. Yeah. I'm with you now.
So make America great. So here's the thing. So we're going to apparently this is because I've heard this in the media. This is the biggest transfer of wealth in American history.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow, that's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's great. Now, they didn't say that when they were taking the money from people who were working and then giving it directly to the poor for their health care. That was social justice. This now taking the money from the people who have jobs and not giving it to the poor, But allowing those people who have jobs to maybe keep a couple of extra dollars that they already earned, that's a transfer of wealth. You're transferring the wealth not from the rich to the poor, but you're not transferring it.
No, you're taking
back
it directly. You're taking it from the poor, and you're giving it to the wealthiest among us who don't need it.
It's a huge tax cut for the rich. This is legitimately their argument. You're not making this up. They are saying, as of a few years ago, money was earned by people, and then they passed a bill where the money they earned had to be given to someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
and by the way, one of the architects of the program said it must be that way.
It must be that way.
That any healthcare plan that was fair and just and right must redistribute wealth.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, it's just not somebody who was part of it. It was the head guy.
Donald Berwick.
Yes. Yeah. It was the head guy of Obamacare. So it was about redistribution of wealth. But no, everybody called us racist for pointing that out using their own words. But now the press is saying this is the biggest transfer of wealth of all time. This is a horrible, horrible thing. Now, here, they're right, not about the, you know, transfer of wealth. They're right about this is a horrible, horrible thing, because all this is going to do is weaken things. First of all, it started out as a $5 billion pool for those with existing conditions. Well, no, I mean, $5 billion, that's going to cover everybody with existing conditions? Probably not. Okay, so we're going to really buckle down, says the Republicans. What we're going to do is we're going to ask for $8 billion, exactly like Dr. Evil would do. Okay, then it is $8 billion dollars. CBO estimates, and they don't have anything out on this officially yet, but it will take five times that amount, could be $50 billion to be able to cover pre-existing conditions. Now, if that's what the CBO says, you can guarantee that it is at least 5 to 10 times what the CBO says, because they always have it wrong. So they're just going to take more money and put it into the existing conditions. And the Republicans will say, yes, but at least we're not going to collapse the insurance companies. Yes, you will. You'll be able to find a way to collapse. Believe me, we have no doubt that you can collapse the free market system. Make no mistake, the reason why the Heritage Foundation was targeted, remember, if it wasn't for Jim DeMint, you would not have Neil Gorsuch as your Supreme Court justice. You would not have them. It was Jim DeMint that put that list together, that pushed that list, that made sure that Donald Trump stayed on that list. And that's why we have Neil Gorsuch. They took him out because the Heritage Foundation at the time was saying, no, this health care bill is just as bad. Maybe it's a little bit better, but this isn't what the American people wanted. So just like Obama, we have to watch this administration, see what the other hand is doing. They told us we're coming after the Freedom Caucus, but instead what they did, as we were rallying around the Freedom Caucus, they went and took out the Heritage Foundation. Now the Heritage Foundation is in the clutches of the Steve Bannons of the world and the Lindsey Grahams, who strangely makes more sense now than people like Paul Ryan. At first we liked Paul Ryan, then we were like, oh, well, he's a dirtbag, but at least he's not Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham looks like Ben Franklin compared to the GOP now. That's how far Lindsey Graham hasn't gotten better. The GOP has gotten worse. So now what they're going to do is they're going to pass this thing and strong arm everybody to vote for it. As Pat said, just as Nancy Pelosi said during the Obamacare debacle, we're going to pole vault over the wall. We're going to drop in, parachute in. We'll do whatever we have to do. And that's exactly what they're going to do.
Is there room for the argument? And some Republicans are making it that we all know if whatever the House passes, let's say they pass the perfect health care plan, it's going to go to the Senate, and the Senate is going to do something completely different, and they're going to have to come together at the end anyway. So is it worth getting something through? You're going to have to go through this process later on anyway with the Senate. Get it through. You're going to and figure out if you can come up with something good with the Senate, and then you'll be able to vote on that. Is it not worth advancing this so at least there's utilize?
No, there's not some way to do anything because it's going to collapse. And anything you do is going to collapse. And then the whole damn thing is blamed on you just in time for the Democrats to ride in on their Marxist horse and say, see, they screwed it up. They screwed it up, made it worse. We got to go single payer health care.
What do you do, though? Nothing?
No, what you do is you fix the damn thing. You actually fix and allow it to be free market.
But the reality is,
that's not going to happen.
The reality is the Senate's not going to approve that anyway.
I know. So,
why not advance something? And you're going to have this negotiation at the end anyway.
You know what? There's because there's nobody with a spine. I guess, you know, I could look at that and say, well, I'm paying taxes. I'd rather have less taxes taken from me for something that I know is a disaster and a destroying health care. But at least it, you know, at least I'm paying less for it.
So what you're advocating for, seemingly, is a massive transfer of wealth from your paycheck back to you.
Yes, I am.
Did you believe this guy? He's saying it out loud. He wants his own money.
Selfishness.
selfish. What a jerk.
Selfish.
Yeah.
I mean, in reality, I don't know what you do here. I mean, I would not want to vote for this. It's a disaster. And it's getting worse by the day. However, I don't. With this process the way it is, with the people in office that are in office, I don't know if you just take a 5% gain and it's 5% better than Obamacare, so take it and go. And maybe I'll have a few years of 5% better until the whole thing blows up anyway. Because keeping Obamacare, if it's going to blow up with this plan, it's going to blow up with Obamacare too. It's just a matter of who you're blaming it on. So do you sit here and not do anything?
No, because they'll blame that on you.
They'll blame that on you, too.
You knew that Obamacare wasn't working, and you refused to do anything.
You're going to get blamed either way.
Yeah.
We all know this.
Yeah. You know what would have been nice? Man, we should have thought of this. If we would have had somebody had principles. If we just had somebody that had principles, you know, because don't get me wrong, this guy... This president, he's going to get in there and he is going to be able to destroy the GOP. He's going to tear the system down. He's going to get the weasels out. He's going to hold them accountable. He's going to get those things done and he can beat the media. And that's why he's going to be able to do it, is because he doesn't care about the media and he doesn't care about losses. So he's going to be able to get that done.
He could certainly have talked his way through the Civil War, but not this. not a GOP Congress in repealing Obamacare.
Right.
That's too high of a hill. Mm-hmm. But certainly would have solved the slavery thing by a little talking if he was around.
Just exactly like Andrew Jackson did.
Yep.
You know.
No, but he didn't.
No, he did.
No, he didn't. And
he fixed
and
the
he had
Civil
a
War
gigantic
thing.
Plantation. down in the South. I don't know if anybody notices that, but he had a giant plantation. Of course, he didn't have it when he got into office. What he did is he was poor when he got into office, and then he started just taking the land from the Indians, the Native Americans, and he would tell his friends. He set up a little kind of offshore real estate company, and he would look at the map after inviting his friends to the White House and say, hey, by the way, I'm about to release all this land. You might go have it appraised, and then when I release it, be the first in the title office, and I had nothing to do with this. That's how he bought his mansion.
That was nice of him.
He left. Uh-huh. He came in poor,
nice of him.
And he left wealthy. One of the wealthiest presidents of all time.
You have to admire, though, how he broke every single promise he made to the Indians. You've got to admire that.
No,
don't you?
You do.
You really
you
do. You got to say, wow.
Well,
that
he
guy,
had a big heart. He had a big heart.
A huge heart.
Huge heart. And he was so upset about the slavery, he could have solved it. He was a soldier in the South. I mean, what soldiers in the South back then weren't against slavery?
Well, I didn't say he was going to solve it that way. He said he maybe he'd solve it by keeping it. We just said he was going to solve the problem. He didn't say that slavery was going away.
Yeah, solve the problem of the Civil War.
Of the Civil War.
Yeah, you're right.
Because, I mean, people don't ask why did the Civil War happen? I don't know. Who knows? Who's thought of that before? There's never been any thought put into that. No historian has ever been asked about it. Nobody's ever written a book about it.
Right.
Like, whoa, it's just like, it's basically just like somebody flipped a coin and said, we're going to war. Well, why do that? You know,
they didn't need to do that.
Right. That was one of the big issues of the time.
Abraham Lincoln, he was really more of a warmonger. It was Andrew Jackson who was such a decent human being. And had sometimes the slaves would come in and wipe the tears from his eyes. Mm-hmm. He was such a good guy. And the Native Americans, he would.
They loved him.
Oh, they loved him. And he loved them. Well, he loved the kerosene lamps the lampshades that he made out of Native American skin. It was beautiful. And he had such a heart. And those lamps lit the way for American divine destiny and manifest destiny.
A lot of people blame the Trail of Tears on him. In reality, that was someone who littered. And the Indian was looking over the hill and saw the litter and started crying one tear.
Yeah, and they were mixed with Andrew Jackson's tears.
Right.
He was like, you're bloodying up this property that I'm about to sell to my friends so I can be the richest man in America by the end of my term. But who doesn't admire him?
Glenn Beck program.
Mercury. 888-727 back.
Oh my.
The Glenn Beck program.
Oh my. Oh my. Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski are getting married. They are.
And that's not a joke, right?
I thought it was a parody article when I read it.
Nope.
It's actually true. This was supposedly
being covered by everyone. That's
one of the biggest insults you could possibly level at them at the Morning Postum show with Joe and Mika or whatever it is. Supposedly, that's the one way you could get under their skin is to say they were having a relationship. They hated that, right?
And oh, my gosh.
They're engaged
that made
for
his
real?
Blood boil. He drove her to Monaco in a convertible for a few hours, bringing the ring with him on the ride. But he didn't feel it was the right place once he got there. And he was happy that he waited. When he put the ring on his finger, he said it looked perfect.
Put the ring on his finger?
The ring on her finger.
Oh, okay,
it looked like it just meant to be there. Scarborough.
That's a good get for Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. Scarborough had broached the topic of marriage casually a few months ago. Said it had been quite a long ride, an unexpected one. He's been married twice before. I think she's been married three times before. They're getting married. And what's really special is when they just had lunch at the White House after Trump was inaugurated, and they went down a couple of weeks later and they were having lunch in the White House. And this crazy couple just kind of blurts it out a little bit, like, hey, this is a possibility. And wait until you hear the romantic story of the White House.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Oh my goodness. Is this going to destroy? Is this going to destroy the Morning Joe chemistry? That's what people are asking today. Now, here's a show that has zero ratings, has every big name ever. I mean, you look up and you'll be like, I think that's Tom Hanks. Is that Jesus also on the show? And nobody watches.
No, I guarantee it's not Jesus on the show.
And they're worried now that this love affair that has been secret for so long is out. They're going to get married, and so will that destroy that dynamic sexual tension that the audience was feeling?
Vanity Fair has the exclusive today. They write, Scarborough and Brzezinski still do not officially live together. The couple says right now they're doing a lot of racing around, wondering how to blend their households, where they're going to find space for their combined three dogs, three cats, two rabbits, and a chicken.
And I'm the crazy one. And I'm the freaking crazy one. Are you kidding me?
How many chickens do you have?
Zero.
Really?
They have no idea if the news will... Well,
not a single chicken.
Not exactly true, but not living. I'm not living in New York or the New York area.
Okay.
They have no idea if the news will alter the show's dynamic now that the alluring, flirty, aren't they tension balloon will be popped. Nor do they know how it will impact the newsroom. Wedding plans are still up in the air. They have already ruled out one idea, however. When they went to visit Donald Trump in the White House just a little more than a week after his inauguration.
And by the way, wasn't there supposed to be some big feud?
Yeah, we didn't buy it. Everybody else did, but we didn't buy it. They sat down for lunch with the president, Ivanka Trump, and Jared Kushner, ostensibly to talk about their longtime friend, about his first week in office, and issues related to women. Once the fish and scallop potatoes had been served and special sauces delivered directly to Trump were placed on the table, the couple said the president came up with an idea. If they planned on getting married, they should consider doing so at Mar-a-Lago or how about the White House? That's when Jared interrupted and said, "Hey, you know what? I've got my license. I could marry you," said Scarborough. According to Scarborough, that's when Trump snapped from the end of the table saying, "Why would you marry them? They could have the president of the United States marry them."
Oh, wow, my. Does the president actually have a special dispensation to perform marriages too?
Yeah, no,
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, no, you can go to a judge, you can go to a mayor, you can go to a steamboat captain.
I guess so. I've never heard
you
of that.
You can go to anybody. Trump. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Right. So anyway, that's the latest. And I mean, since we're on celebrity news, there's another celebrity love affair that we've been following. It is the trial of Alex Jones.
That's right, Glenn. We've been looking into this story every single day for the past 5 months. Our entire news team has been working day and night in an investigation.
We don't have a news team, and I don't know why you're talking
the
like
whole
that.
Newsroom is asking this question.
We don't have
who is this man?
Is this the
Alex
newsroom
Jones?
At 11 Alive?
11 Alive okay. Reporting. Is he a performance artist?
And now it's time for another episode of Adventures on Prison Planet.
Whatever person you casually watch on television or on the internet is not who they say they are. On today's episode, we will explore the mountain of evidence that suggests Alex Jones is not Alex Jones. We all know Alex Jones is a fan of conspiracies.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay. Do you understand that? Serious crap.
But this is the one conspiracy he doesn't like. It has long been reported on reputable sources like WordPress websites and 4chan threads that Alex Jones is in fact the legendary comedian Bill Hicks. Does this voice sound familiar to you?
The elite are all about transcendence and living forever and the secrets of the universe, and they want to know all this. Some are good, some are bad, some are a mix. But the good ones don't ever want to organize. The bad ones tend to want to organize because they lust after power. Powerful consciousnesses don't want to dominate other people. They want to empower them, so they don't tend to get together until things are really late in the game. Then they come together. Evil's always defeated because good is so much stronger.
Of course, it's unmistakably Alex Jones, the same owner of this voice.
There's a song I wrote when I lived in a dumpster. My eyes are red, and my clothes are stained, and my breath stinks. If you can see this, you're not nearly as wasted as I am.
Actually, that was Bill Hicks. Hicks was a great impersonator, would frequently use the accent you just heard. It's the same voice, people. Especially when you consider the fact that Bill Hicks was prone to irrationally angry outbursts like this.
I want my children to listen to people who f***ing rocked. I don't care if they died in puddles of their own vomit. I want someone who plays from their heart.
Mommy, mommy, the man Bill told me to listen to has a blood bubble on his nose.
Shut up and listen to him play.
I can yell at the comedian because I'm a drunk. that gives me carte blanche. I got a and I'm drunk. I can do anything I want. I don't have a I can yell at performers because I'm a idiot because I got a I want you to go find a soul.
The only other person I've ever heard go off the deep end like that is, you guessed it, Alex Jones. Alex is very aware of the Bill Hicks theory and addresses it from time to time on his show, apparently. Sometimes he vehemently denies it, but sometimes he mistakenly slips up and admits the truth.
I carried on the charade for more than 15 years. Kevin, don't mess me up. Known as Bill Hicks, I carried out the fraud for my accomplice, Kevin Booth. Hold on. Stop.
He's clearly joking about the confession as a way to cover up the fraud. But what should strike you about this video is the noticeable drop of character, change of voice, and the mention of Kevin Booth. Kevin Booth is Alex Jones's producer and good friend. That wouldn't be notable, except for the fact that Kevin Booth was also Bill Hicks's producer and good friend. Kevin's production company, Sacred Cow Productions, has produced projects for both Bill and Alex as if they were different. It gets even stranger, though. Bill Hicks' last interview before his death was on the Austin Public Access Channel. The same channel Kevin Booth claims to have first heard Alex Jones's show. One of the last projects Kevin Booth shot with Bill Hicks was coverage of the Waco siege. One of the first projects Kevin Booth did with Alex Jones was about the Waco siege. What was another project Kevin Booth was working on with Bill Hicks before he died? I quote, "I remember the very last time Bill Hicks came to Austin Access, spring of 1993. We were working on a script called Public Access about a Rush Limbaugh-type character who angers a viewer, and the viewer came to the station and killed the host on the air." It's not a coincidence. But the most damning piece of evidence that Bill Hicks and Alex Jones are one and the same is the orange drink. Let's be honest. Alex Jones sells many bizarre products on his websites, but there's one that stands out. Tangy Tangerine. What would possess a conspiratorial talk show host to sell a random, obviously terrible, Tangy Tangerine orange drink? Listen to this from Bill Hicks.
This is the product, you ready? Orange drink. I'm going, what's the name of it? Orange drink. It's classic England, right? Just such a socialist nightmare over there, right? That's the drink. It's orange drink. I said, yeah, you really got my act down good, guys. That'll be great. You know, when I'm done ranting about elite power that rules the planet under a totalitarian government that uses the media in order to keep people stupid, my throat gets parched. That's why I drink orange drink. Yeah, right. See, don't you see how it would all fit in? Don't you see how every word I said would be hollow and filled with nothing?
Wow. Wow. I mean, that clip gives me chills. Bill Hicks told us in advance that he would leave this Easter egg, and there it is. It's all a big inside joke. Alex Jones is a creation of Bill Hicks and Kevin Booth, specifically designed to mock the very people who watch Alex Jones. This is an extended comedy routine. It's Andy Kaufman to the 1,000th power. But obviously they are right that the government is putting chemicals in the water to turn the frogs gay. I mean, I'm with them on that one, 100%.
This has been another terrifying and disturbing episode of Adventures on Prison Planet.
Thank you so much, Stu, for that incredible report that you just did. What was the biggest thing that you walked away with?
Well, I'll tell you, Glenn, I started this as a skeptic. Uh-huh. I started this as a project to disprove this conspiracy theory. And I after seeing the evidence, I couldn't believe it. I don't want to be a person bringing this news to people, but the evidence is overwhelming.
When you played the audio back-to-back of the two voices, It took my breath away.
Well, and this being radio, Glenn, you cannot see the visual evidence that we've come up with as well. I've posted it on my Facebook page. You can see the pictures side by side. You can see the hairline side by side. You can see the mole pattern on his neck side by side. You can see the dental structure side by side. And you tell me, there is just too much evidence. And we are, all we do here at 11 Alive is ask questions. That's all we do. We try to bring the news to the people. We're humble people just trying to bring the news to everyone.
Well, thank you for joining us at the desk. One more thing. Mm-hmm. How did
There is no desk here, by the way.
How did the original Alex Jones die? Was it in a gay frog Islamic bar or?
Well, first of all, I think it's quite obvious after hearing that he did not die. Bill Hicks did not die.
No, I'm asking about the real Alex Jones.
I don't think there is a real Alex Jones.
So there was no murder involved.
No.
Of a third character.
No. Okay. Well, that could be an episode. I can look into that with all of our resources.
Were they ever seen
the
together
at
parties?
No, they never were. Actually, Bill Hicks did die in a very strange way. He died of, the reporting was he died of pancreatic cancer at the age of 36. Interesting that the average age.
Unlikely.
Or 34 it was. The average age of pancreatic cancer, a diagnosis, is 71. Almost all cases are past 45.
So how did Bo Hicks really die? Did Alex Jones kill him?
No, I think you're missing the way this is working. There is no Alex Jones. Bill Hicks is Alex Jones. They're the same person. Mm-hmm. And
so there's no Alex Jones.
There's no, well, there's Alex, I mean, he calls himself Alex Jones. But
there's no Bill Hicks. This is a fascinating story, and
thank you
for following
it. You seem to have a real grasp on
11
it, too,
Alive.
Glenn.
Well, I don't usually listen to the packages once we go off camera.
Mm-hmm. Really?
And so I'm going with the flow here, and it is a fascinating
journey. You don't just walk into the anchor desk.
No.
Yeah.
By the way, we'll take a look at 11 Alive weather in about 15 minutes.
And be careful.
Thunder bumpers this afternoon.
Our polling is back on which one you think of will be fired from the 11 Alive news desk, just for something that's not racist, but clearly is racist. And also our survey on how did Bill Hicks or Alex Jones really die? And we'll have the results at 11 on 11 Alive. Strange that we're talking about death on 11 Alive.
11 Alive, yeah, that's a weird name for
ironic, isn't
network,
it?
Isn't it?
Back in a moment.
Mm.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
We've got a couple of things that we need to take care of today. We have Aaron Watson coming in. He's going to be... he's got a nice announcement to make on the program. Also, we'll have more on the French election, more on this wonderful health care bill. I want to talk a little bit about Stephen Colbert and his media rant. I don't want him pulled off the air, but what part of this, what's happening, does he not understand? Is he just motivated by ratings? Because Jimmy Fallon is coming up.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
I've got to show you a couple of things here in the next couple of minutes that really are mind-boggling. We are called science deniers. Science is, we are so far away from the, as Rudyard Kipling said, the gods of the copybook headings, that we don't know truth anymore. We have no idea what truth is. And I like to base my life on time-tested eternal truths, the things that you know. Water will wet you, fire will burn. Let's talk about chromosomes. We've played the audio from an old show of Bill Nye the Science Guy. Now that he's on Netflix, there's some creative editing going on. Has science changed or become inconvenient? Who's the Real Science Denier? And a personal message to Stephen Colbert begins right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Stephen Colbert did a rant, I think it was on Monday night, and it is being even described by Vanity Fair of the most furious rant on Donald Trump yet. John Dickerson went and said that was doing an interview, and Donald Trump made an insult to John Dickerson from CBS. And to show class, CBS is called the Tiffany Network. I think it was originally owned by Tiffany's. And so it was the Classy Network. And to show how classy, he actually dredges up and starts calling CBS, which nobody even knows anymore, unless you're a broadcast history buff, or you work for CBS. Nobody knows they were called the Tiffany Network. But to show how classy he's going to be, he starts calling CBS, we have the Tiffany code here, the Tiffany Network. And that is, if you take on one of ours, you take on all of us. And he goes into this rant, and it's not funny. It's not meant to be funny. But maybe somebody wrote it to be funny, but he's delivering it with every bit of venom he has. Here it is.
Walking out in the middle of a sentence wasn't even the president's biggest insult to John Dickerson.
And I think, actually, I've been very consistent. You know, it's very funny when the fake media goes out, you know, which we call the mainstream media, which sometimes, I must say, is you. But when the
you
fake
mean me personally, or
your show, I love your show. I call it Deface the Nation.
Really? Yeah. Donald Trump, John Dickerson, is a fair-minded journalist and one of the most competent people who will ever walk into your office, and you treat him like that? Now, John Dickerson has way too much dignity to trade insults with the president of the United States to his face. But I, sir, am no John Dickerson. And when you, okay, all right, let me introduce you to something we call the Tiffany way. When you insult one member of the CBS family, you insult us all. Mm-hmm. Bazinga, all right? Here we go.
Here comes the Lions and the Christians.
Bazinga.
Mr. Trump, your presidency, I love your presidency. I call it Disgrace the Nation.
It's the same.
You're not the POTUS, you're the BLOTUS. You're the glutton with the button. You're a regular Gorge Washington.
Oh.
You're the president, but you're turning into a real prick-tator.
Oh, golly. Uh-oh.
You attract more listen to than free Rogaine.
Listen to the tone
of this. You have
more
people marching against you than cancer. You talk like a sign language gorilla who got hit in the head. In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's holster.
Your mama jokes.
Your presidential library is going to be a kids' menu and a couple of Jugs magazines.
Oh, boy.
The only thing smaller than your hands is your tax returns.
No.
You can take that any way you want.
Awful.
We got a great show for you.
Delivered with anger and vitriol, you can tell Stephen Colbert, as many people do, hate this president. Hate him. When he was first elected, and for a long time before he was even running, I took responsibility for the things that I did to half the country, and not my half of the country, the other half of the country. I just deemed the other half of the country morons, Marxists, America haters, stupid, whatever it was. That was wrong. That's not who they are.
Some of them are.
Some of them are, yes. Some are. And some on our side are Nazis. But the vast majority are not. There are the fringes, and there are those who don't like America, and those who like America but would like to see it fundamentally transformed into a dictatorship. And I found people on both sides that would like to do that. The point is, since this has started, I have said to the media, you can bash me. I'll take all the bashing you want. Please, please, don't make the same mistake I did, because it will end the same way and it will cause even more division. Stephen Colbert, probably the coldest ice water I could throw over your head to try to wake you up is, you have become me, circa 2009. Stop it. Stop it. Now, let me change. Oh boy, looking at Pat.
You were never like that.
There were times that I was really mad.
Never did you ever do these kinds of things. None of us did with Obama. We never called names like that.
I put my face in a bowl of Cheetos on this guy.
Yes. A big deal.
It was
orange face. Was it the most stellar bit of all time? Perhaps not.
No, perhaps it was not. Probably the worst bit of all time.
Obama, we said he had Marxist policies. We said he grew up with communists.
I know, but
There were times that
it was vitriolic, that it was, I was so angry.
Well, yeah. Yeah, we were pissed.
Right. And there were times like that. And I understand having times like that. And it felt good to have times like that. You can only get punched in the face so many times. It's why England voted for Brexit. And it's why Marine Le Pen is a possible winner of the French election. Because people all over the world are tired of being punched in the face by the elites, by the press. And what you're doing, Stephen Colbert, I know what you're doing. I've been there, and it doesn't work. And for as much as the reason why I say the vitriol that you feel for me, that's what you're causing on the other side. Half the country disagrees with you. When you're hitting him like that, what do you think the other half is going to do? They're going to run to his defense.
I would say it's more than half, because we're not huge Trump fans, but that makes me defensive of him.
Yes.
Even we get
it
defensive
more,
of him when you're doing that to him.
The way to win is to not play the game. Donald Trump, look what he did. I felt bad for Dickerson. I stopped thinking about Dickerson, and I stopped thinking about that was a really jerkish move of the president. And suddenly, as Pat said, I'm looking at you going, if it wasn't Glenn Beck, I'd be hating you right now. I feel bad for you right now. What are you doing? You're smarter than this. What are you doing? If you want to be thought of as the Glenn Beck for half of the country, believe me, it ain't no picnic, Stephen. And we have a country to bring back together. And you might be rolling in the press accolades right now. You might be making money. You might think, hey, my career isn't over. But look at how close Jimmy Fallon is. He is in the, tens of thousands? He's, I believe, beating you in the demo. And he's in the tens of thousands now, nipping at your heels. You know why? Because this doesn't last. Hatred doesn't last. No one wants to go to bed feeling angry and hatred. Man, I can feel that all day long. I'm going to get into bed with my wife and turn on the TV and have you pumping my blood so much. I'm so angry at the TV. Half the country is going to be so pumped up. They'll turn into an Alex Jones. And the other half of the country is so amped up when they see it, they want to tear you apart. Tell me the role that you are playing in the division of the country. I've spent 4 years with people like you asking me. Let me ask you, Stephen Colbert. And I'm going to go a step further. I'll say something that you would have never said to me. I don't want you fired. I don't want you boycotted. I don't have a problem that you are very popular and that you are on CBS every night and you disagree vehemently with many things that I said. I don't mind that you disagree and want to take the nation in a completely different way than I do. I'm not sure that you do. We've never spoken. You would just assume, and if I would listen to you, I would just assume that you're crazy. Boy, what a stupid thing that is.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
So Aaron Watson is in studio. Had dinner with Aaron and his wife, Kimberly, who is just wonderful. A better person than you, Aaron.
Yeah. I kicked my coverage.
In case you don't know who he is, number one best-selling album. He's done it once. Now he's just done it again with Vaquero. In fact, who was it I was reading about? Who has the number one record this week?
I think it's Paisley, Brad Paisley.
Okay. So Brad Paisley. Huge, as I'm having dinner with him, and he's too modest to say. Brad Paisley, tell me I'm wrong. I watched your record sales. I watched his record sales. He's number one and sold about 40% more than you?
Yeah, I think he sold...
40% less than you?
I think so. I think they sold around 25,000 first week, and I think we were around 40.
This has got to be driving people out of their minds.
Awesome. Yeah.
Got to be driving people. I mean, that's awesome. Paisley, man. How's that make you feel?
Well, I mean, he's one of my favorites. I mean, he's, you know, his first couple albums, I would say, had a huge impact on my career, just his songwriting and melody, and he's one of the best. So I mean, it really, it's kind of one of the things we talked about last night, and that you brought up to me. It's like, I'm just thankful to be here. Mm-hmm. I feel so blessed. I mean, and it's like my fans have been rallying behind me for all these years. So it's kind of like a great victory for us all.
Yeah, it's like. I went to your show, you know, at, where was that?
Establishment in Fort Worth. It's called William Roberts.
Yeah,
Billy Bob's. Or you call it Billy Bob's.
Yeah. Yes. So we went to Billy Bob's and saw you with your fans sold out at Billy Bob's. People don't understand. You think it's like a honky tonk. Oh, it's a little bar. No, it's like a block and a half.
Yeah.
And to sell Billy Bob's out is a really big deal. And it was so cool because all of your fans, you personally remind me, and your fans remind me of the fans of Michael Bublé.
Man, that's the greatest compliment you could give me.
Yeah. Real. I mean, it's just full of joy.
And not only selling out Billy Bob's, but at the Houston Rodeo, you brought in what, 50,000 plus?
Yeah. On opening night.
That had to be amazing.
Yeah.
Man, we really wanted to go.
It was, hopefully we'll do it again. Yeah. I have to tell you. I was...
That, by the way, is nervous. The spot usually reserved, or it used to be reserved, I think he retired, for George Strait. He was the one
you
who always...
You think he retired, you rookie.
I have no idea. I mean, it's country music. But I, because I lived in Houston, I know that every year he kicked off the rodeo.
So can I tell you something? You know what his accomplishments are now? Do you know what he's just accomplished?
Who? This guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? Aaron Watson.
Yeah.
And he's, again... too shy to bring this up, but this is the real accomplishment. After he got off tour, he started going to, you know, like jazzercise and stuff with pregnant women. And he can now
I work out with moms.
Yeah.
You work out with moms?
Yeah.
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 And he walked in, he swaggered in thinking like, I'm gonna work out with moms and I'm not gonna have a problem because I'm a guy. And thought some strangely that this would make him feel like more like a man, but he is actually You're losing several in several ways to 7-month-old pregnant women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really a no-win situation for me. But yeah, my wife, that's kind of our thing first part of the week. I'll go with her to work out. And usually her and the moms are over there. And I mean, they're getting it. You know, they're sweating. Meanwhile, I've got my protein shake and I'm kind of over there with the weights, you know, watching TV. Just a couple of her girlfriends didn't show up. So I was like, girl, I'll work out with you. I got this. And I'm telling you, I couldn't walk for a week. Couldn't hardly hold my guitar. I was so sore. And then now it's kind of gotten, you know,
it's gotten ugly.
It's gotten ugly.
It's gotten ugly.
So you couldn't handle the pregnant women's it workout.
I'm a combination of arrogance and ignorance,
mm-hmm.
all mashed mm-hmm. up into one.
Yeah.
That's where we differ, because we know we can barely stand up.
That's right.
We wouldn't even be trying.
Yeah, we don't try the pregnant women workout.
So the best thing though is it's like we're doing these like squats, these body squats, and I'm doing body squats with this sweet girl who's like 8 months pregnant, and I'm thinking, this hurts. I don't think I can do another body squat, and she's just over there getting it, and I'm just like, yeah, I know my place.
So have you ever tried yoga?
Not yet.
Okay, so my wife brought me to yoga one time. This is the craziest thing ever. Because I did the same thing. She's like, yeah, do yoga. And I'm like, I'll do yoga with you. Yeah, sure. You think that's working out? Okay, I'll do yoga with you. So I went to do yoga. Oh my gosh. It is the most agonizing, horrific thing ever. But it is so relaxing. I am not kidding you. 3 times the yoga instructor had to wake me up. I go from agonizing pain, just like, I can't do it.
I need to try this.
It is from the most excruciating pain directly to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
That is pretty awesome.
Okay, so you said that, you know, if you did something, you know, with
your CD or your album, your whatever music it is went number you one. Do. You'd come back here and you'd write a country music song that we'd perform.
It's crazy. I forgot that I said that.
Did you?
And then Matthew sent me a text message. He was like, don't forget your song. So like yesterday morning, right before we jumped on the plane, I scripted something.
Oh, you spent a lot of time on
it. All right. So hang on. We're gonna listen to what you have. Did you bring your guitar?
No.
Oh my gosh.
Really?
Well, it's on the bus headed to Birmingham. Is that thing even tuned up?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was as of 6 o'clock this morning.
We'll check into the song that you've written,
okay.
Mocking country music, when we come back.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Aaron Watson, who is a soon-to-be country music legend, joining us, and he's doing something he promised that he would do, but he forgot. I guess family is more important.
Whatever.
Yeah. Whatever.
Whatever.
I mean,
if we're not that important to you,
yeah. Even your daughter. You know, even your daughter. Not sure she likes you.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I'm not number one.
Right.
She. One night. I put her to bed and we listened to Taylor Swift, and like I know every song.
She's a big Taylor Swift fan.
Oh, yeah. And
you're a big fan of Taylor Swift too, aren't you?
I am. I actually really am. Yeah. I love.
Actually, I am too. She's got a really good business model too.
I don't even think it's a business model. I mean, it might be, but
she does have a lot of heart.
Yeah, I think she has a lot of heart.
Yeah,
I think it's both.
She's incredibly talented, and I know I'm like this independent artist that's supposed to be like hardcore honky tonk country music, but good music is good music,
right?
And but we were sitting there, I was putting her to bed, and I said, okay, Jolie Kate said, Daddy, you and Taylor Swift are my favorites, and I said, okay, but I gotta know which one's number one. And she made this real like. And she goes, but Daddy, Taylor sings girl songs. And I said, okay. I said, so you love her music more, but you know, you love me. And she's like, yeah, because you're my daddy. So after the Houston Rodeo, I mean, and when I got off the stage, there were fireworks, laser light show. Right. They drive me around a truck and the crowd's just roaring. And I went backstage. And my favorite moment of the whole night was I came in this one door to like the backstage green room area, and my wife and kiddos came in the other opposite end of the door. And when Julie Kate came through that door, she saw me and she sprinted towards me and she jumped into my arms and I said, girl, who's your favorite now? And she goes, daddy.
That's nice.
And it just was like,
there is nothing better. That's great. It'll pass.
Yeah, it will pass.
So she will. She turns 13, 14.
But she's also a bandwagon fan. That's
right. That's right. And the other thing is that, like, you know, I'm technically like, girl, you get anything you want because your old man's out there hitting the road playing music. I technically, even if I'm not your favorite, you need to tell me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
The mule is pulling the plow. Give the mule an apple every once in a while.
Yeah. How old is she?
She's 7.
Is she your oldest?
She's my youngest. Jake is 11. Jack is 9. Joey's 7. She's my favorite.
What's the obsession with the Jays?
My wife.
Okay.
Yeah.
Her name is Kimberly. So
I don't really. Well, her middle name is Jan.
Oh. Okay.
And my first name's James. So we kind of get in on it.
Okay. All right.
But yeah.
All right. Okay.
You know, I just do as I'm told.
You know, you're about to play Pat's guitar. This is not in tune. You should tune this up. Play this. This is a real guitar. This was given to me by Hank Williams Jr.
Oh, my goodness.
Really?
Yeah. He said, you remember the Monday Night Football theme? Remember how controversial that became at the end?
Yeah.
And how mad he got?
Yeah.
I saw him like a week later. And we, you know, we talked about it on the air.
Yeah.
And he called up and he was like, hey, guys, thanks so much. So I saw him about a week later, and he said, I had like 10 of these that were made, and he said, I smashed all of them, and he said, I was about to take the last one and smash it, and he said, I decided it's got to go to Beck. So this is the Monday Night
epic.
Football.
That is cool. Wow.
It's the Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh,
isn't that great?
That Holy is crap. Incredible.
I didn't know you had that.
Yeah.
I don't think you've ever showed us that.
That's been up in the shelves of the library to keep it away from. Isn't that cool, though?
Yeah, people who care about sports. Was that the end of that sentence? Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah.
So anyway. So you want to tune that up a little later and
we'll
play
that.
We'll
tune that one up later.
Okay. So go ahead and.
So, you know. First of all, I want y'all to know that before I leave, I'm getting boot sizes because the first thing that we got to do for Pat is we got to get him in boots. And I was thinking, here's the deal. I want to get him some with some really nice crepe soles. They're comfortable.
Okay. They have that?
Crepe soles.
They have those. I could get you in something that's real comfortable and it's going to feel like those shoes, but they're boots. That's step one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen.
Not at all.
Yeah,
I believe. I've seen great changes in this man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I see he has listened to your album and actually likes it.
Yes.
Well, we're trying to meet each other in the middle.
Okay.
And you know, it's that thing we were talking about how people who are different can still love each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So like this morning, getting ready, I was listening to Foreigner.
Oh yeah,
nice.
Yeah, to get you in the mood a little bit.
Well, just to have
nice.
That. So that you and
that
I were on the same
sort of yeah.
Yeah, Foreigner, you're listening because you know Pat got them into the Rock and Roll Hall of
Oh no,
that didn't work out.
Well, not yet.
Not yet.
It's
okay.
It's a still progress. Okay.
Well, we need to work on that.
Okay.
I'll join that.
Seriously, they're like they've sold 80 million albums worldwide.
God.
They've
you
got 40 top 40 hits.
I guess I did.
I mean, that's
I apologize, America.
They're legit. They're legit.
Dear Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Admit
80 Foreigner. Million records.
Yeah. I mean, if Tupac Shakur can get into the Rock Hall of Fame when he's not even a rock and roll artist,
this is very. These are great
Look at
points that you make.
Two people coming together right here.
See?
Okay, so have you written a song?
Yeah, so I left this kind of.
It needed to be poking fun at country music because last time you were here, we were talking about, you know, the drinking, dying, divorces.
Well, is this a duet between you two?
Yeah, it's going to be like I wrote. Part of it because he needs to contribute his heart to this song.
All right.
So it's like this song's called Pat's Pop Country Blues.
Okay. All right.
And
All
this
right.
is just
he
like,
hates blues too, so you know.
Yes,
well,
I do.
He that's kind of why.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
All right. Okay. I mean, all right. Well, I'm willing to go.
I'm taking some
there,
of the
really.
Things that he hates,
yeah,
and this is like his frustration. Like this is the world. This is like I'm letting everyone know this is Pat's world. This is right. the frustration
okay.
that he lives
this
in.
This is where we're coming together here.
Yeah.
Okay, right. It's nice. All
I've right. never really played this whole song. So okay.
Well, this really kind like of sounds right? like this really kind of sounds like you didn't take this seriously.
It does
at
sound
all.
Like that.
Does
right?
it a little bit, yeah.
And I would just like to say I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. All right.
For that.
All right.
So yeah, okay, here we right. go.
Okay.
Well, real life ain't no joke, man. My 8-track just broke and my Foreigner tapes won't seem to rewind. So I turn my radio on. There's another sad song. She done me wrong and my dog up and died. No right. more pickup lines or pickup trucks. I've had enough of politics and bad news. I'm an old rock and roll soul, stuck in a mud hole, and now I'm singing those pop country blues. Then this,
nice.
Then this little.
It's not country unless you whistle.
Yeah,
there's got to be some whistling.
Then you start whistling. You're so talented.
Boy, they are good.
Yeah, whistling is one of my other specialties.
No more pickup lines or pickup trucks. I've had enough of politics and bad news. Just an old rock and roll soul stuck in a big old mud hole. And now I'm singing those pop country blues. My name is Pat and I've got those pop country blues.
Nice. Oh, wow. That's nice.
Now, I think it's really nice, but it doesn't make fun of you at all.
I know.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, that's Pat's part.
This is Pat's verse.
Yeah.
His heart wasn't in
this,
that part.
So this is where Pat comes in and writes a verse. But really what this is more not to advertise a song, but to advertise me, because people are going to say, like, how did you hit it big? And today's my day where you realize that it wasn't country music that made me big, but it's the fact that I'm fixing to come out with my own font.
Right. That's really, I
because
mean,
it's amazing.
Wow, look at that. That's like, what you, and you wrote stunning. That or did you have your wife?
No, I wrote this. My singing yeah. and writing, incredibly average, but my handwriting
stellar.
Is in stellar.
That's
stellar.
Amazing.
Find
that's,
someone
that's
with more talent than me with the...
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, you couple your actual penmanship with Pat's whistling, and I think you got a hit.
It's a winning combination.
I tried to whistle. So this is Pat's.
You guys will make tens of cents.
This is Pat's. Pat's going to write his verse on the back.
All right, so get out of here. You two get out of here and go write.
Are we fixing to write a verse?
I don't know if we're going to be able to write one in that amount of time.
What? You think that took him more than 2 minutes?
Maybe no. not. Like one minute.
He wrote that on
Matt
the,
sent me the
tag.
He's
on
like,
the way here.
Pat's expecting a song, and I was like, song. The song. The song.
So get out. Get out. The two of
hey,
you get out, and
right.
then
big
come back.
Thanks
and,
to all you guys for all your help with the Vaquero.
Yeah. We are so pleased.
The audience, really, has
the audience really likes
the
you.
Thing that I was telling you last night, and I have to brag on all you guys. It's been incredible as I'm touring around the nation, having people come up to me saying, I hadn't heard of you until I heard you on the show. And now I'm like a huge fan. So, man, it's
that's
just
great.
Like,
that's
we love
great. That's great.
We love your listeners. They're incredible people. We love what they stand for. We love what you guys stand for. Thanks, so, thanks. Thank y'all.
Thanks.
Thank and you. It's mutual.
So, all right, awesome. Mutual.
Get okay. out and
are we fixing are we fixing to write a song?
Yeah, go write What's a song happening? And then
okay.
come back in, I don't know,
okay.
half an hour, six
Can I
days,
unplug this or is it
going to
pop? It might.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
Welcome to the program. Glad you're here.
Interesting interactions you had with the media yesterday.
I was on BBC yesterday for BBC Newsnight, and they wanted to talk about, you know, the fracture in America and how we could come together. And I was ready to talk to them about, you know, France and what was happening over there and Brexit. And nope, didn't turn into that.
Well, I would have never taken this job had I known that you hate all Mexicans. I mean,
well, no, I don't think they said that. They said that I have said, you have said, and then you hear the paper rustling, you have said that all Mexicans are criminals.
Right. Like, that's an unbelievable statement. I never would have wanted to work with someone who believes that.
I've never said that.
No?
No.
They had a quote, though, obviously. They wouldn't just bring up that you said all Mexicans are criminals.
No, they actually just said all Mexicans were criminals. Then, when I said, no, I've never said that, the satellite went out. 10 minutes later, the satellite comes back on, and he says, hey, I want to reset that question. And he rewords it exactly the same way. It's so funny because he said, I gotta reword that because I was a little wordy.
Okay.
And I said, okay. He said, so you're a guy who's even said that the Mexican government is rife with crime and corruption.
I just want to point out, Evan, that that took you more words to say, and that one sounds accurate. That's a little different than all Mexicans are criminals, isn't it?
You also interviewed by the New York Times about your watches, which is an interesting
topic.
That came
out yesterday, right?
Yeah, it came out yesterday.
Yeah, it was weird. I don't know. They said, and they actually just wanted, if some guy, I didn't even know this, they do deal on watch collections or something. I didn't even know they did that. And so they asked me about mine, but the interesting thing about it is the question that he asked me at one point,
the last one they have in the interview is, do you worry that your fans might resent
that
you have so many nice watches?
Yeah.
Why would they?
I know. I'm like, no. We're all capitalists.
Right.
We think you could be able to keep your money that you earn. We're all capitalists on this side.
You get to do what you want with it.
Yeah, we don't think that you should, that everybody should have a Timex unless that's the watch you want. You could, it's your money. I know it's a crazy thing for the New York Times, but no, that's not a problem for my audience. Probably is for yours, for people like me.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. CNN is reporting world leaders have to go, have to use a new tactic with our president, and that's flattery and lots of it. France's election is ending in a verbal cage fight. We'll give you the latest on that. Facebook has added 3,000 reviewers to combat violent videos. And Aaron Watson is here. We have a special announcement. We're going to start with that right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello. Hello, America. So last night I was having dinner with Aaron Watson, country music star. I don't know how our little four-person dinner, I never have a chance to go out to dinner with anybody. I mean, I don't do it. I'm practically a hermit.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about going out and having dinner. And my wife comes in and she said, what is this about a receiving line? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, there's a photographic line or we have to have photos taken. And she said, I thought we were just going out to dinner with Aaron and Kimberly. And I said, yeah. And then I remembered in my head, Mercury One had come and said, hey, we want to make an announcement with Aaron. And I stupidly said, you know what? We're going out to dinner one night. Why don't we just do it at the same time?
Yeah.
And I
completely forgot I said that. And she said, how did we go from a table of four plus 81?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
holy cow, really?
I don't know, honey, but I'm going to find out that.
We'll get to that
bastard that did that
to
you.
I'm
going to get to the bottom of that right away. So I wasn't popular. And then on the way there, she's like, well, I hope somebody told Kimberly so she doesn't feel out of place.
Nobody did, right? Did she know? Did your wife know?
I don't know. Whoever set Glenn up set me up kind of too.
Yeah, yeah. So it wasn't good. Well, I set me up, and so I set you up. Because I don't tell my wife this. And if your wife is upset, don't tell your wife this. We'll just blame it on that faceless bureaucrat that works for me.
Let me tell you why my wife is happy. Because she's backstage. They're doing her makeup. And they're eating donuts.
Right. She here?
She's a happy girl.
She's here this morning? She's so great. We were having this great conversation. Now, here's a guy who's just come off tour. People love him. He was just at which award show was it?
The something-something country award show.
Yeah. Okay, so the something-something, one of those country award show. And just high as a kite, having a great year. We're talking last night, and we're both talking. We spent probably 20 minutes just talking about tithing and the concept of 10% is not enough for people like us. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we were having this in-depth conversation of maybe we're supposed to give all of it away and then just have what we can live on and then tithe from that.
Yeah.
I mean,
we had wonderful, it was
a great conversation.
It was. We had so much fun and gosh, our girls looked beautiful.
Yeah.
And we've both talked about how blessed we are to have them next to us. And but we had so much fun. It was fun to get Kimberly out of the house for a little bit. And, you know, she's really, I mean, when we were at the Country Awards show, we were sitting on the, it was a fantastic night, not for the awards show, but that I've been gone so much lately to get her out of the house and take her to Vegas.
Yeah.
That's really what it was all about. But we were sitting there. We had great seats. Keith Urban came out and they had us all stand up and he was singing a song right here. And before he sang the song, he looks over at me and then he looks at me again and goes, "What's up, Aaron?" And gives me like the bro handshake. And my wife was like, "Oh my goodness, he knows your name." And I was like, "Girl, they all know my name."
So I didn't say this to you last night, but Keith Urban, I just saw
pretty
Keith
cool.
Urban.
Yeah.
About 8 months ago,
uh-huh.
and I go backstage and to meet him and just, you know, and Tanya's a huge country fan.
Yeah.
And so we go backstage and he turns around and he's like, "Glenn Beck."
Yeah.
And I did exactly like you. I just looked at my wife like,
Told you.
It's the way I roll, baby.
It's the way I roll.
But you know, the best part of the award show is when we were on the floor and afterwards we had people come down. They were sitting up in the rafters, come down. And one lady said, "I just had to come down here and meet the girl who looked so beautiful in that blue dress."
Oh my God.
She said that to Kimberly.
Nice.
And
that's nice.
That was, we had a wonderful, it wasn't about awards.
It's nice to be on the outside, still a fan looking in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not the person, I mean, you could be on the stage or whatever, but you're still going, "I belong up in the cheap seats, and this is really cool."
It was really cool. And I, you know, for me, it wasn't about when I told Kim, I said, I'm not in this to win awards. Music is my life.
You're lucky because I don't think you won one.
Yeah, I didn't. The Aces, here's what's crazy. I'm on an incredible streak, guys. I'm on a streak. I don't want to break it. 18 years without even a nomination.
Nice.
Yeah. And that I'm is, all about the streak.
Nice. Yeah.
But I didn't have
the streak. I want you to know, I've accomplished that.
Yeah. But you want to know what?
I don't have a single country music nomination, so I don't feel so good about that.
I told Kimberly this. I looked at her, and I've won it all. I've got it all. And I don't even know where I'd hang in an award, because like the walls of our house are covered with photos of our children and our family. And that's the things
they'll
that matter
turn on
the
you
most.
At some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway, I wanted to mention this. The Mercury One Ball is going to be happening November 18th here in Dallas. He's going to be joining us. He and his band, they are great. It is the Michael Bublé of country music. The ball is American Cowboy, which means, you know, basically the women have to look nice, but guys can come in jeans.
I think that's what it is.
Pat
will be wearing boots.
That's a Texas way. Well, or not, you know.
I think it'll be one of the two. Anyway, tickets are going on sale now. Go to mercury1.org/M1ball. And we would love to have you a part of that. and come and just hang out with us. We really have a good time. This year, we've knocked it up a few notches with Aaron Watson.
I'm excited to be a part of it. I mean, yeah. Everything that Mercury One stands for, more importantly, everything that Mercury One does.
Yeah, thank you.
So we're going to have a ton of fun, and afterwards, I'm going to hang out, so...
Maybe we could perform this song together.
Absolutely.
There you go.
I've heard you guys. You know? Now, you went into the other room for about 20 minutes.
And let me tell you why good is good.
Yeah.
Because somehow, Pat and I, we've written a four-minute song.
Yeah.
In about...
Two and a half minutes.
So a lot of people think that's impossible.
Yeah. It's really not. No, when you hear it, you know, there is something. Craftsmanship takes time.
Did you say craftsmanship?
No, craftsmanship takes time. Craftsmanship, you've. Well,
we got
go ahead,
down.
Play it.
We got that down.
Here it is.
Yeah, this is a. So we're building off of what he kind of had and the melody. So this is like.
The end of it.
The end of it.
Well, can you do the whole thing?
I could try.
I mean, good.
To start from the beginning?
This is the...
No kidding.
Really? The whole thing?
I mean... Okay.
Well, yeah, the song.
Right. It's a song.
Hey, it's good.
Yeah.
Give it to the people, right?
When it's good, it's good.
Okay.
Right.
Real life ain't no joke, man. My 8-track just broke, and my Foreigner tapes won't seem to rewind. I turn my radio on, and there's another sad song. She done me wrong, and my dog up and died. No more pickup lines or pickup trucks. I've had enough of politics and bad news. I'm an old rock and roll soul stuck in a big old mud hole, and now I'm singing those pop country blues. Flip the page.
Now,
the second verse.
Nice, nice. Second verse. Now,
this
when
is
does Pat start?
Second verse, not the same as the first. And right. Pat never sings.
Pat never sings. That's
so
not
this
right.
Is Pat. This is Pat. I'm singing Pat's pain.
Okay. All right. You're singing Pat's pain.
So this is Pat. This is. Right. These are words from Pat's heart.
All right. All right.
FYI. Mm. I ran over barbed wire. I got a flat tire on my way to the courthouse. For the divorce, she got the house and the dough. I'm feeling low on the Glenn Beck show, 'cause all I got to keep was the horse.
Oh, that's
no cute. More pickup lines or pickup trucks. I've had enough of politics and bad news. I'm an old rock and roll soul stuck in a big mud hole, and now I'm singing those pop country blues. Yeah, my name is Pat, and I've got those pop country blues.
Oh, that is.
Wow.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Did you notice that we played our guitar slightly out of tune just to feel?
Yes, I did.
The melodic.
I did notice. Yours not out of tune as much as the Hank Williams.
This is what we call an orchestrated battle.
Is that what it is?
It's what we just had.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah. It's so good to see you. Where are you
so
going
good.
Next? Are you
I'm fixing to catch a plane. Playing in Birmingham tonight. Knoxville, Tennessee tomorrow. Charlotte, North Carolina on Saturday. Then... flying back home, and then we're heading back out to the east. I think we're hitting Florida.
So you're still on tour supporting the album?
We've never stopped touring,
really?
Ever. But wow. It's been incredible. Our shows around the nation have just been selling out. And it's just like...
I'm telling you.
It's incredible.
The last guy that we felt this way about, that I felt this way about, was Michael Bublé. And we had Michael on... many times at the very beginning of his career, and it's the same. What attracted me to him was the quality of music. He's just so quality, but it is his humble, excited attitude that you just feel like you're a part of the success and the fun.
Yeah,
and that you have the same quality.
Well, I'm just, you know, it's not about me. It's about the band, it's about the family, it's about the fans, and I've been encouraging the fans, you know what, we do this for you guys, so I encourage people, since I'm not only the CEO, but the custodian of my record label,
right.
Share my music with your friends, burn copies, I don't care, I make music because I want to bring people joy, and your listeners they've turned into incredible fans, so, I mean, I've got some some ideas of some things we talked about at dinner last night of ways we can make a huge impact on this world with music. I mean, just doing more research on Mercury One, being there last night, meeting everyone at Mercury One, the passion for humanity and being proactive.
I met somebody last night, one of our people that they just got back from Iraq. And they're working on a project now with, I don't want to get real specific, but around 100 kids that are being tortured and much worse.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how what was bad for ISIS 2 years ago is a picnic for ISIS now.
Wow.
It's evil is breeding evil, and it's getting worse and worse. And when we can talk about what they're doing, it will take your breath away. And we're hopefully going to be making an announcement in a couple of weeks.
It's incredible.
The Nazarene Fund has gotten even more serious than it already is. We're taking some steps now to make it quite large.
It's incredible.
And
again, the gala is in November, right?
Yeah, the gala is in November.
Can you get tickets already? Or?
Yes, mercuryone.org/M1ball. mercuryone.org/M1ball. It's usually, I think we have about 1,000 people there. I think about 1,000 tickets to sell or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a really kind of really cool, we all just hang out all night. Mm-hmm. And we'd love to have you come and join
us.
It's in November 18th. That is the Friday. That's a Saturday before Thanksgiving. And just come and let your hair down and have a great time and hang out with us. November 18th in Dallas, Texas. Go to mercuryone.org/M1ball. Always great to see you.
Good to see you, boys.
Thanks, sir.
Love y'all. Love y'all.
Love you, too.
Thank you.
Thanks.
God bless you.
Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
He's really such a remarkable guy, Aaron Watson. As he was walking out, he just said to me, you know, we were talking last night about tithing and, you know, and how we just need to, we just have to give. And so we started talking about it, and I said, you know, tithing isn't the same for, you know, a country music star or for me. Because I remember the times not too long ago where I sat down at dinner and my wife and I would be going over the bills and we'd be like, got to pay tithing. Okay, well, we could pay tithing or we could pay the rent. We could pay tithing or we can eat. And it took a lot of faith to do that. And I said, you know, Aaron, you know, you've got the number one best-selling album on the charts. You know, that's not sacrifice for either of us. Maybe we should give everything and get down to the place to where we just have our needs. And then we start doing our tithing again. And so we were talking about that. And of course, we decided that's stupid. But but he just left. And he said, you know what I'm going to do? He said, I want to record this. And he said, I'm going to record maybe 10 or 15 of my most popular songs, and I'll do them all acoustic. I'll break it down so it's very different, all acoustic. And he said, I'll talk to iTunes, see if I can get them to waive their fee, and we'll do 100% goes to Mercury One, save those kids. Nice. And he said, you know,
really crazy.
$10,000. He said, it'll take me $10,000 in a studio to put that together. And he said, we'll have that done. And he said, make $1 million. And I said, well, let me pick up the studio thing. And he said, no, that's my 10%. And I said, well, if you're going to make $1 million, that's 1%. I need another $90,000 for that.
Yeah.
So
glad you held his feet to the fire.
Yeah, I mean, got to hold him. I mean, look at him ripping the Lord off like that. what a great guy. What a great guy.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He really is. Yeah. It's great to see his success. It's really fun. The nice guys can do well. Be successful. And he certainly is.
He said he was, he has friends that went to Hollywood, and we've had friends like this too. And he said, they just forget who they are. He said they get there and they start getting around. And it's, I think it's partly because he's still living in a town with 750 people. He's still living in this little Texas town. Yep. Listen, he's with his dad all the time. His dad is 100% disabled from the Vietnam War.
Oh, man.
And so, you know, takes care of his dad and loves his dad. And they're just, they're still just living a normal life. And that's, I think that's hard. Can you imagine going from a stage sold out night after night after night with people throwing things at you and just, I mean, not throwing things at you, like throwing that they throw at me. I mean, you know, throwing ice things at you and singing your praises and then going home. That's hard. That'd be hard to keep your head on straight.
Definitely.
Shows good parenting. Good parenting.
And a wife. To keep you grounded.
And she is.
That's always important.
It was amazing because the two of us were talking last night and those two were talking. And every time I'd hear Kimberly, his wife, say something, I was just thinking to myself, it's Tanya.
Yeah, I mean, I know like, you come home and you're like, well, you know, you have a choice, obviously, to make. Do you want the solid gold bathtub diamond encrusted? I said no because I'm a real person. Right. I'm just a real guy. I'm just a I'm a normal guy.
I said, and I don't said, need
that.
I said gold
sacrifice.
I said gold is too much. Platinum is more understated.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right.
And you know,
that could be
sure it may cost a little more, but it's not as noticeable.
Right,
exactly.
Right. It could be pewter, could be solid pewter, could be solid silver. Gold is ostentatious. So I went with the platinum.
Right. Sometimes we just have feel the need to connect with the regular
people. The little people.
Yeah. And we do that well from about 50,000 feet in the G5.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I don't know if you know this, but it is May the 4th. May the 4th be with you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. And huge Star Wars fans, and we were talking in the break about May the 4th. And if you look at what George Lucas did at that time, it was crazy. 1970s, you got to put yourself back into that. 56,000 people just died in Vietnam. Then you have Watergate. You've got the communist Marxist radicals. It's, I mean, it felt very much like today, except I think in some ways worse. You had the a complete collapse of faith in America. You had the collapse of the faith in the dollar, in the military. Watergate was happening, inflation, gas shortages. And then if you look at the movies, it was One Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Clockwork Orange, Taxi Driver. Good heavens, man.
Not exactly Disney movies.
No, French Connection, Dog Day Afternoon. I mean, it's not like, you know, here was the happy point in the 1970s in the movie theater. It sounded a little like this. That was like the, oh, what a relatable movie. Oh. I see ourselves in that, getting eaten by a shark. So when he came out in the mid 70s and he decided to do Star Wars, nobody was interested in this. Here he is in California. He grew up in Modesto, California, George Lucas, and he, you know, his childhood hero in the movie theater was Flash Gordon. And so when he heads off into Southern California to go to film school, to USC, he has this Flash Gordon kind of thing. He produces a film called THX 1138. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen clips of it. It's actually not so bad. But
it's
a little weird. It's a little weird. Yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he develops it into a full-length feature. It wins in college, and then he develops into a full-length feature, and everybody in the movie studio hates it. They actually demand their $300,000 back that he put up, or that they put up for up front.
Does that work? Are you?
Yeah, I mean, no, I don't know. I don't know. But they were like, "That's so bad. We want our money back." So he's friends with Francis Ford Coppola.
He's the only one who liked the movie,
right? And Coppola, you know, it's Coppola, but before Coppola is Coppola. Mm-hmm. And he's like, dude, you've got something. You just got to go for it. But can you not get out, break out of your darkness and the darkness that's around? And he challenges him to do something lighthearted and something pure American and related and relatable to the American people. So he comes up with American Graffiti.
The film was shot in just 28 days for under $1 million.
Wow. Now, 28 days, $1 million. Wow. And I don't think people really understand. I don't think people really understand what that, I mean, that turned into Happy Days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was
that changed the 1970s. American Graffiti, all of a sudden, Ron Howard is huge.
The most successful science fiction film at that point was 2001. And successful then was that it made about $24 million or something like that. Jeez. Most hit science fiction films would make about $16 million, which was the Planet of the Apes films and that sort of thing. But most science fiction films would make under $10 million. I mean, there's no reason to think that it would do any different.
Totally different.
So, American Graffiti is released. He had already been talking to the movie companies, Universal Studios, United Artists, and they looked at his, you know, space opera, Star Wars, and they all said, no, thank you. And so they pass it. But American Graffiti goes out. It's the third highest grossing movie of the year. It brought in over $100 million, which was very rare in the 1970s. Remember, it cost him, what was it, $1 million?
Mm-hmm. Less than a million.
Less than a million. Brings in $100 million. All of a sudden, he's knowing now that his passion project is up next.
Undaunted, Lucas presented Star Wars to Alan Ladd Jr., the new head of creative affairs at 20th Century Fox. Ladd, a former producer, was able to recognize potential in the filmmaker, if not necessarily the film.
We had a meeting, and George said, well, I've been thinking about this thing called Star Wars, and told me about it. And I said, that sounds terrific. I mean, the technology part of the whole thing was completely over my head, but I just believed in him and his genius. And I sort of recognized off of American Graffiti that he really was a genius, so I just flew with it.
In doing some research on Star Wars, it's amazing how much work he put into it. I mean, he met with really brilliant people about mythology. 1974 comes along, and he gets a deal for this space fantasy, the space opera, and he begins to write the screenplay.
The filmmaker was able to distill his idea down to its essence. An epic battle between a heroic rebel alliance and an evil galactic empire. Mm-hmm. The chief villain, Darth Vader, was there practically from the start. But it took time to come up with Star Wars' three main heroes. A plucky young princess named Leia Organa, the fearless Corellian smuggler known as Han Solo, and most important, an idealistic farm boy whose original name was Luke Starkiller. Over the course of his adventure, Luke trains to become a Jedi Knight, deriving his power from a mystical energy known as the Force. But along the way, the script went through radical changes. At one point, Luke was a 60-year-old general, and Han Solo had green skin and gills.
Oh, it's amazing. He goes back and he's meeting with these philosophy professors and these professors that study cultures and religion, and they are, I mean, he's studying the Iliad and he's looking for what are the mythical stories and what he's scouring the world. What do they all have in common? And so he starts writing this thing and it goes way past one movie. And he realizes he has at least three movies in this. And so he decides to, he doesn't tell anybody. He just takes and cuts them up into three movies. Doesn't tell the movie studio, I've got two other movies. And he decides, I'm just going to make this one movie. So he goes to the Fox studio executives. And before he goes, he gets this really expensive artist to do all of the artwork to show the story, so it's all in storyboard form, because he knows nobody has the imagination to see this. Now, in a world where movies now are, you know, $200 million to make, this was like $8.5 million to make. That back in the mid-1970s was a fortune, especially for a guy who had one hit. And $8.5 million. And they didn't have the technology to be able to make any of these scenes. I mean, they're still flying by wire. It would have looked like an old Godzilla movie. And so they're like, he knew that the movie executives wouldn't be able to see it. But because he has the success of American Graffiti, he says, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this. If there's any sequels, it doesn't tell him that he's got three already written. If there's any sequels, we'll talk about that later, negotiate. And I tell you what, I'll take less, but I want all of the merchandising. This is before everybody was merchandising. It's like Desi Arnaz and saying, I want all the reruns. So nobody's merchandising. They're like, this kid's a moron. All right, we'll do your deal.
I was very careful to say, I don't want more money. I don't want more points. I don't want anything financial. But I do want the right to make these sequels. I was working on the assumption, as every filmmaker works on, which is the film will be a disaster. And that it won't be promoted and it'll just die a horrible death. And it'll be very hard to get these next two movies made.
George said, I'd like a big slice of the merchandising. Up until that time, merchandising had been relatively unknown.
When I took over the licensing, I simply said, I'm going to be able to make t-shirts, I'm going to be able to make posters, and I'm going to be able to sell this movie, even though the studio won't. So I managed to get control of pretty much everything that was left over that the studio didn't really care about.
So now here's the amazing thing. They don't have anything. He has no money. He doesn't have really anybody's trust. He doesn't have the technology. He starts something called Industrial Light and Magic. He's got no money. He just gets a bunch of people and says, I don't know, get some milk cartons. Can you cut them up and make them start to look like a planet? I mean, he's doing crazy things in this studio. They have to build their own computers. They didn't have stop animation. When we did stop animation here in these studios, you rent these computers that tell, they track every single shot so you can go back and look. They didn't have that. They had to build their own computers to be able to do all the tracking shots. I mean, this is crazy to attempt. What I didn't know is there was an argument internally. The movie company said, okay, we're going to let you do this, but you're an unknown. You have to have famous people in it. And he's like, no, I don't want any famous people in it. The guy, the movie studio, and they thought, George Lucas even thought, the guy who tried out and they thought the whole time was going to be Luke Skywalker. Was it Luke Skywalker or Han Solo?
Han Solo.
Yeah, Han Solo. The guy who was going to be Han Solo was going to be Kurt Russell.
Yeah. I was very careful to say, I don't want more money. I don't want more points. I don't want anything.
Here's the audition.
It checks out again. There's no mistake.
It's Kurt Russell's voice.
You can't find Organa Major?
Well, I found it. It's just not there.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, it's weird. Crazy. We're looking at all these original tapes. Do you know who's going to play Princess Leia? Princess Leia was going to be Cindy Williams from Laverne and Shirley. Oh,
wow. Okay. So
how weird is that?
Crazy. Just crazy.
Before Mark Hamill, they were talking about, does anybody remember even The Greatest American Hero?
Yes.
The guy who played The Greatest American Hero was going to be Luke.
Oh, my gosh.
That would have been bizarre.
So they start filming this thing. They go to North Africa to film all the equipment because of the sand and the heat and everything. This thing is headed for absolute disaster. And he finally has enough film and he brings it to California to Francis Ford Coppola and Brian De Palma and a few others. All but one of them hated it. The guy who said, you've got something, is Steven Spielberg. He said, even unfinished, this thing is going to be a monster. You're good. The problem was the score. if you remember, set yourself back in this time, the movie companies were looking for anything that would relate to the time period and to be a fad and everything else. And he knew this is a timeless story. This is the Iliad. I don't want a fad. I don't want, that's why I didn't want stars in it. I don't want any of that. I want it to be classical. And that is why John Williams was hired to do the entire score.
Fortunately, Lucas was able to recruit one of the industry's most accomplished composers, John Williams.
Yeah, otherwise it would have been like a disco soundtrack. That's what they wanted.
That's what they wanted.
Disco.
Cindy Williams, Kurt Russell in disco. You know what that is? Jeez. Quite honestly, you know what that is? The movie that opens today, Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy,
Volume 2. That's what that is.
Right.
Except they would have been doing it seriously.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. I think, Pat, you told me when we were going through all this research about how Harrison Ford actually became Han Solo.
Oh, this is great.
He read the lines to the actors.
He was
because he'd been in American Graffiti.
Right.
And Lucas didn't want him in the movie because he was already known.
Right. He's like, I don't want you, but I'm going to hire you just to be the line reader.
To help these guys who are actually going to be in the movie.
And so these guys would come in that were reading for it, and he'd be like, okay, listen, here's some things that I learned about this character. He's really kind of like this. He's like that. So he was coaching, and none of them could get it right. None of them were right. And finally, Lucas was like, what the hell? What? Play the role. And that's how he got it.
Yeah. Wow. Because he was just better than the Kurt Russells and everybody else they brought in.
And one amazing part about that is people don't realize after that movie, Lucas retired and never did anything of value for the rest of his life.
No, that's only half true. He didn't retire, but
okay. You are right.
He didn't do anything of value after that.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah, it seems like we just get started, and before you know it, it's time to say goodbye.
Time goes by so fast.
It does. It does. But here's the good news. There's two more hours of the show with the Pat and Stu show. And it's...
Yay!
Yeah, yeah. So you can check that out at the blaze.com/TV. And the fun just doesn't stop.
Yay!
I'll see you tonight. Great show tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV. And then back here tomorrow, we'll have the latest on the French election and all of the other wonderful things in the world that are happening.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.